heaped upon the floor to form a kind of throne, were turkeys, geese, game, poultry, brawn, great joints of meat, suckling pigs, long wreaths of sausages, mince pies, plum puddings, barrels of oysters, red-hot chestnuts, cherry-cheeked apples, juicy oranges, luscious pears, immense 12th cakes, and seething bowls of punch that made the chamber dim with their delicious steam. In easy state upon the couch there sat a jolly giant, glorious to see, who bore a glowing torch in shape not unlike Plenty's horn, and held it high up to shed its light on Scrooge as he came peeping round the door. "Come in!" exclaimed the ghost. "Come in, and know me better, man!" Scrooge entered timidly and hung his head before the spirit. He was not the dogged Scrooge he had been, and though the spirit's eyes were clear and kind, he did not like to meet them. "I am the ghost of Christmas Present," said the spirit. "Look upon me! Ah-ha-ha-ho! 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 Oxytocin! Oxytocin! Oxytocin!" Hello, 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 and welcome to this edition of The Jolly Heretic. I hope you are enjoying the preparations for Christmas. And Christmas is, of course, a time of joy, a time of love, a time when we get together with those who we love best and celebrate the birth of the baby Jesus and celebrate Yule or whatever it happens to be. It is a time, it is associated with the chemical oxytocin. And what I want to talk about today is the way in which you know I've talked on this channel about the spiteful mutant, and I've discovered some fascinating research which indicates that the spiteful mutant's oxytocin network literally works differently from that of normal people. Literally, they experience joy, a rush of joy, when it comes to maladaptive behaviour, to behaviour that destroys their own genetic interests, to behaviour that destroys their own group interests, to behaviour that ultimately destroys humanity. I think this is absolutely fascinating. And this has been commissioned by our squire, of course, and I found a very interesting paper, or he alerted me to a very interesting paper, The Oxytocin Paradox by Richard Bethlehem et al., 2014, in Frontiers in Behavioural Neuropsychology. Now, what it found is that oxytocin, which has been highlighted as the kind of love chemical, what it does is it makes us more loving, more strongly bonded to other people. So if you administer oxytocin to people, they become higher in empathy, they become higher in in-group affiliation, they become better at reading other people's minds, they feel feelings of love towards other people more strongly. It's a love chemical. They feel positive feelings towards other people strongly. Love, bonding, whatever. But specifically, they only feel them towards members of their in-group. For example, members of their own ethnic group, or members of their own family, members of their in-group. If you administer oxytocin to people, then they feel more negative feelings towards members of their out-group. They feel in-group conformity and out-group hostility. So they feel less in-group anxiety, but they feel more out-group anxiety. They feel more of a sense of gloating towards out-groups, more of a sense of envy towards people that they regard as part of the out-group. So it is a drug that rewards, in effect, positive ethnocentrism and negative ethnocentrism. Now, what we have discussed on this show before is that there are a number of ways that you can pass on your genes. You can pass them on individually, of course. You can pass them on in the kin selection, so investing energy in your nephews and nieces, things like that. But you can also pass them on what we might call extended kin selection or group selection. And I've looked at another video why this is entirely scientifically justifiable. It's just an extension of kin selection. So what ethnic groups are is they are extended
kinship networks, and two random English people are more closely related to each other than a random English person and a random French person. This has been demonstrated by genetic assay data, and this is why people are prepared to lay down their lives for their own group at times of war, because doing so is, if you protect your group, it's a way of indirectly passing on more of your genes. Now, what's been shown in computer models is that the group that is highest in positive ethnocentrism, that is to say, in-group investment, trusting the in-group, love towards the in-group, cooperation towards the in-group, you know, bonding with the in-group, and negative ethnocentrism, that is to say, hating the out-group, despising the out-group, destroying the out-group, that is the group in computer models that dominates the grid. And therefore, we are selected to be positively and negatively ethnocentric. And indeed, being positively negatively ethnocentric correlates strongly with being religious, something that we are also selected to be. It's about 0.7 heritable, being strongly religious. And why? Because religion tends to take things which are adaptive in evolutionary terms and make them into the will of God. And one of the things that's clearly adapted is being positively and negatively ethnocentric. Now, in this paper, they present this as a paradox. They say, how can it possibly be that people, that the same chemical, oxytocin, produced by the body, can make people more kind and loving, but concomitantly nasty to members of their out-group? Well, this makes a great deal of sense, because in evolutionary terms, you're going to be the people that will survive will be the people that are going to do adaptive things. If the adaptive thing to do is to be positively ethnocentric and negatively ethnocentric, then the body will reward that. Those whose bodies reward that behaviour by releasing oxytocin and making you feel good, making you feel positive, making you feel happy for doing those things, those are the people who are going to survive. The people who release oxytocin when you do the maladaptive thing, i.e. release oxytocin when you cooperate with the enemy and when you betray the in-group, when they get oxytocin, well, those groups that have lots of people like that, they're going to die out in evolutionary terms. So it makes sense that people are going to feel high levels of joy when they do things that are adaptive, and the mediating cause for that is the body releasing oxytocin when they do things that are adaptive, i.e. they bond strongly with the in-group and they repel the out-group. I mean, it makes complete sense. Why wouldn't that happen? Of course, that's what's going to happen. Now, another paper found, this was called Oxytocin-Enforced Norm Compliance Reduces Xenophobic Outgroup Rejection by Nina Marsh et al. In PNAS 2017. This found an interesting nuance to this, which is that outgroup preference can be actually increased by oxytocin, by the administration of oxytocin to people. There's a slight nuance. They found that you get people that will you give money, will you give charity to refugees? Now, what was found was that normally people will tend not to do so. Normally, you administer oxytocin to people, they become more in-group oriented, more out-group negative, and therefore they don't want to give any charity to refugees because they see them as outsiders. However, if people are primed with the view that the group as a whole thinks that it's morally good and right to give resources to refugees, then having inculcated people with that view, if you administer oxytocin to people, there is a 74% increase in the tendency to want to give resources to refugees, i.e. oxytocin then becomes associated with being, to a greater extent, pro-refugee and anti those who are xenophobic and are against refugees. Now, why would this be the case? Well, there are a number of adaptations that we have, which we would expect our bodily reward, our bodily joy system, whatever you want to call it, to reward. One of these would be positive and negative ethnocentrism, but another would simply be conforming to the group. We would be adapted to conform to group norms, because in prehistory, those who refused to conform to group norms, and group norms would of course be in prehistory adaptive group norms, would be cast out by the band and killed. So it would make sense that we would have a system which would reward us chemically with oxytocin for conforming to group norms, making us want to conform to group norms. So you have two things in battle. On the one hand, we're going to be rewarded with oxytocin for wanting to be ethnocentric, but on the other hand, we're going to be rewarded with it for wanting to conform to group norms. So therefore, if group norms can be subverted such that the group norm becomes a maladaptive behaviour in evolutionary terms, i.e. putting the benefit of a genetic outgroup over your own, then people can be easily inculcated into conforming to a maladaptive group norm because oxytocin will be administered, will flood their system when they conform to the group norm. So this is obviously what solves the paradox. You have two things that are adaptive, conforming to the group norm and ethnocentrism. In prehistory, the group norm would always be ethnocentrism, but for various reasons now, that is not the group norm. People are therefore rewarded with oxytocin for not conforming to the group norm, and so the whole thing is subverted. What was interestingly found in this, why would this be the case? Why would this be a benefit? Well, obviously, we are caged strategists, we are evolved to a complex, harsh yet stable environment in which we have to are highly competing with each other because we're relative to people that are strategists that evolve to an environment that is abundant yet easy and unstable. This is a harsh environment, and therefore there is a lot of intra-group competition in which people need to compete with each other in the harsh environment in order to survive. They do this by finding niches, and therefore the environment they have to be flexible to the environment in order to survive. And this this means that there will be a strong degree to which they will be influenced by the nature of the environment, influenced by other people. With animals that are strategists, with adapted to environment in which you live fast and die young, then they a lot of their complex behaviours, like a cat burying its excrement or whatever, are simply built in, are simply instinctive, because they don't need to be malleable to the environment in order to find new niches in an ever ongoing level of competition. They have their niche and that's that. Once you get high levels of competition, you're competing all the time, you have to find new niches, and so you need to be able to think of new things to do and new ways to change, and so it's no good having highly instinctive behaviours. It's better having a more complex mind in which the behaviours need to be learnt and can be better learnt and differently learnt according to make you more adaptive in a given ecology. So we're highly subject to our environment. And so if the normal evolutionary environment is subverted, is messed around with, then of course we can be inculcated easily to do maladaptive things in terms of passing on our genes, as this shows. However, in a sense, we are doing something adaptive because we are being rewarded by our bodies for conforming to the group. And normally, under evolutionary conditions, conforming to the group is a good thing because you're not cast out by the band and the group is likely to be doing something adaptive anyway. Now, what was also found in this research was that a minority of people that were administered oxytocin before they were inculcated with the idea that the whole group thought that giving money to refugees was a good thing, a minority, it was the other way round. So a minority were given oxytocin and that made them more out-group centric and less in-group centric, i.e. their whole system was maladaptive. Their bodies were rewarding them for doing something which was maladaptive to the group's genetic interests and to their own genetic interests, and was adaptive to the other group's interests, i.e. which would destroy them under Darwinian conditions. So that's what's going on with what we call spiteful mutants. Now, you may recall the nature of the spiteful mutant, if you've watched this show before, which is that under harsh Darwinian selection pressure, which we were subject to until 1800, there was a child mortality rate of about 50%. That meant that every generation, those that were born with mutations that were maladaptive, mutations of the body that were maladaptive, which they had a poor immune system, they'd die off of childhood diseases, measles, scarlet fever, whatever it happens to be. And so only those that were highly genetically fit, that were very low in mutational load, that were very adapted to the environment, would survive. Now, what that selected for was people who were physically highly adaptive, but also people that were mentally highly adaptive to the environment. So we were selected selecting. We know this for intelligence. It's, we know that we were selecting for religiousness. That's clear. Religiousness is about points, can be up to 0.7 heritable. It's associated with mental health. It's associated with physical health. It's associated with fertility and the desire for fertility. It's associated with being group selected. It's associated with being pro-social. There are parts of the brain that are associated with it. And when you stimulate them, you become both more religious and more ethnocentric. And it's present in all cultures. So clearly, religiousness is something that is an adaptation that was being selected for. All of these, this bundle were being selected for of adaptive things under harsh high levels of child mortality. The Industrial Revolution caused this to break down. Due to medical innovations, better standards of living, that sort of thing. And the result was a collapse from child mortality being 50% or so in 1800 to being 1% today. What that's resulted in is a huge build-up of mutation of all these people, every generation that would have died as children, not who would have had high mutational load, mutation of the body, carrying on and passing on their genes. Now, what this... The brain is 84% of the genome. This means it's a massive target for mutation. And so if you've got mutations of the body, then you can be absolutely certain that you will have mutations of the mind. Consistent with this, mutations, evidence of mental mutation has been building up over the years. We have a rise in autism, which is associated with having an old father, which is in turn associated with mutant sperm. Rise in autism, rise in depression, rise in schizophrenia, all of these signs of mental mutation. And these tend to parallel poor physical health. These tend to parallel, therefore, physical mutation. So we know that this is what is going on. Now, people that have a depression and these kinds of mental illnesses also tend to have maladaptive worldviews. This makes sense, because mutation load is maladaptive in one way or maladaptive in others. So, for example, depression makes you think, it's associated with irreligiousness. It makes you think that life is pointless. It makes you think there's no point living. It makes you think there's no point having children, that sort of thing. And so this is building up in the population. And indeed, it has been shown that atheism is associated with mutational load. People who are atheists tend to not have children. They tend to not pass on their genes, they tend to die younger, they tend to be less mentally healthy, they tend to be less physically healthy, they tend to have depression, they tend to have all kinds of problems. And they tend even to have things like they wanted to be left-handed, and left-handedness is associated with a brain that is asymmetrical. If something is asymmetrical, something is meant to be symmetrical in evolutionary terms, if it's asymmetrical, you haven't been able to produce a symmetric phenotype, which means that you have high mutational load and you haven't been able to fight off disease properly, and so the phenotype has become asymmetrical. So it's associated even with being physically ugly, having an asymmetrical face, which of course again implies that you have a high mutational load. You haven't been able to produce a symmetrical phenotype. So atheism is clearly an example of something, as I've looked at in my paper, the mutant says in his heart there is no God, that is maladaptive, and it is spreading, and it is associated with depression. Now, these are the spiteful mutants. They advocate things like this. They advocate atheism and that life is pointless. They advocate multiculturalism, putting other groups ahead of your own. They advocate socialism, putting other families ahead of your own. They advocate extreme animal rights, putting other species ahead of your own. They advocate maladaptive ideas that would have destroyed us under harsh Darwinian conditions. They are mutants. They are examples. They are the breakdown of normal society. And this into chaos. And it's been shown, and of course what they can do is they can subvert, because we are desirous to conform and to conform to the group, is that once they get to about 20% of the population, we reach a tipping point, and this probably happened in the 60s, where they are so numerous that they are perceived, and psychological experiments have shown this, as the group that's, you know, on the gain, that's going to win. And so people start to transfer over to the Young Turks very, very quickly. This has been shown in psychological experiments. Once it's been pointed about 20%, 25%, that's what happens. And this seems to have been what's happened, and therefore we have transferred over very quickly from adaptive people, from the conservative religious society, to this maladaptive worldview in which we are rewarded by oxytocin to conform to the maladaptive worldview. Now, they are spiteful mutants because, of course, they can inculcate vast amounts of the population who are maybe slightly mutated with these maladaptive views. They can persuade people that are nowhere near as mutated as them through social epistasis to imbibe and follow their ideas, such as telling women to delay having children so that they don't end up having children, or such as telling people to allow their societies to be destroyed, or whatever it happens to be. And that is clearly what they have been very, very successfully doing. Depression is an example of this, by the way. It's been shown that depression, which is maladaptive at the individual level, it causes you to not pass on your genes, can spread. So if you're with, even if you haven't got the genes that cause you really to suffer from depression, if you're with someone that has it, it can make you depressed. So it can spread like a disease. And these spiteful mutant ideologies are examples of this process. And so they spread throughout society, and they do so because we are adapted to be with genetically normal, genetically healthy people, rather like bees in a hive. And if we are not with those people, then this will negatively impact the extent to which even our relatively normal genes are expressed. They will be expressed suboptimally, and we will start to do maladaptive things because we are so influenced by the nature of our pack. And once our pack is about 20% desirous to espouse maladaptive ideas, we will flip over to those maladaptive ideas, and we will follow them, and we will be rewarded by oxytocin for doing so, meaning that we will follow them all the more fervently. And all that will be left will be a small, highly genetically healthy subcast of the group who will be, if you like, the remnant normal pre-industrial population. And those people will be resistant to these new ideas. But of course, these maladaptive ideas. But of course, it will be those people that will be having lots of children. And it will be those. So the future, in a sense, will be likely to ultimately belong to them. But even so that's what we're seeing with these papers. Oxytocin, among most people, rewards adaptive evolutionary behaviour, which makes sense. Among a minority, it rewards maladaptive behaviour. Those people are the spiteful mutants that are undermining traditional society and making us maladapted. However, we can, all of us, to varying degrees, be pushed towards doing maladaptive things once they start influencing the group norms and making the group norms maladaptive, because then there's a new adaptation, which is that oxytocin rewards us to conform to the group, which is normally adaptive, but of course is not so if what the group is doing is maladaptive. And that is the situation we are in. However, as I said, there is some light at the end of this mutational load tunnel, because what we end up with is a situation where you have all of these people who have the slightest mutational load and can be inculcated with this stuff, who won't breed. And all you'll be left with is the highly adaptive people, the genetic norm from pre-industrial times. That's what will be left, as everybody else fails to pass on their genes. So it's a bodes in a rather fascinating fashion for the future. But that is the Christmas message then. The Christmas message is that there may be a present, a gift in the future. That the ghost of Christmas present is not the laughing, jolly giant of A Christmas Carol. The ghost of Christmas present may be the rather sombre ghost of Christmas yet to come in The Christmas Carol. But the ghost of Christmas yet to come, based on this evidence, may well be the laughing, jolly giant, where we meet up and we celebrate our group, and there is positive ethnocentrism and an abundance of food and joy, underpinned by a belief in the eternity and whatever. But at the moment, we are a society that is dominated by Scrooges, by nasty, unpleasant, selfish, maladaptive people that spread negative feelings around society and mess everything up. It's a society of Scrooges. Those Scrooges, like Scrooge in A Christmas Carol, do not pass on their genes, and eventually perhaps will be forced to repent. Well, merry, merry, merry Christmas. And I hope you have a merry Christmas and a traditional English Christmas. Have a read of Charles Dickens's A Christmas Carol. It's a jolly good book, both from a historical perspective and simply from more generally. And if you have any ideas, do send them in. If you want to support this show, you can see ways to do so in the box below. YouTube is crushing this channel, so please, please, please subscribe and hit that bell button. It really helps if you do that. Remember that I live stream on Mondays and Thursdays at 7 p.m. UK time and 2 p.m. New York. And I will see you soon. And goodbye!